Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ron Coomer joins us on the CDW Hotline. CDW, making IT solutions work for you. Orchestration by CDW. CDW, people who get it. And a man who gets it is Ron Coomer. He is our guy, part of the great broadcast team with Pat Hughes and Zach Zaidman. Good morning, Ron. How are you doing?
Hey, Ron.
Good, Brian, David. How are you boys doing this morning?
Well, we're doing well, and I'm sure the team enjoyed their off day yesterday because, well, a couple this week, but the couple losses sandwiched between the two off days, not so good. The offense missing in action yet again, and I don't know if you got to hear any of the Theo conversation we had yesterday, but the tone of Theo was one of a president of the team who's not so happy these days. He basically said, you know, agreed that with what Chris Bryant said, the team's pretty average and underachieving, and it sounded like Theo expects a hell of a lot better from this team.
Yeah, and I think the team does too. I don't disagree that they expect to be, you know, playing in October, and that's kind of what you got. So with them just being a few games over 500 and being in fourth place, I believe they are.
Yes.
That's not exactly what they were looking to be. So, there's still a lot of baseball to be played. There's still two-thirds of a season to go. There's still a lot. But, you know, you still, you know, this happened last year a little bit, and then, you know, and now this year, and you just don't want that. You don't want complacency. You don't want all those things. And I don't think the team is complacent, but I think there's, you know, there's that urgency that we saw in 16 when they won a World Series. You know, it's tough to ignite that or reignite it, but, you know, I still haven't lost hope in our guys. I think it's going to be very good. But I can see why everybody's a little frustrated right now.
Ron, I think it's a little bit hard to understand sometimes because, you know, you talk about the urgency. And I think that you look at the record and it suggests the last two seasons at the beginning, it hasn't been there. And I think players talk about it in vague terms. But it's baseball. It's not hockey. It's not football. There's not the intensity is harder to measure from the outside. So when you talk about a team showing urgency in baseball, how does that really surface? How can we tell when the Cubs are, you know, feeling a sense of urgency more than they have?
Well, I think when a team plays really tight, David, I think you see, you don't see the situational hitting issues arise nearly as much. I think you know, there's that thing of, you know, we make this general statement of, they find a way to win, right? Those are general comments that get made by all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're making comments like that, your team is playing tight. They're figuring it out. Not everybody has to be hitting the way they're capable. Not everybody has to be pitching the way they're capable. But everybody seems to be doing something or some little thing to help a team win a ball game. And right now, you see some situational hitting things not getting done, and I know the work is being put in because I watch it every day in the clubhouse and in a batting cage. I know that, you know, Chile, it's not from lack of work or knowledge. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I think right about now is it's time that, you know, you start creating that thing that gets you back in first place like it did last year around the All-Star break when the team took off. And, you know, maybe it doesn't have to wait till All-Star break. Maybe it's now. But, you know, it happens to every team. It's just happened to the Cubs here at the beginning of the season.
And, Ron, we get a lot of texters and a lot of callers who are beyond frustrated with Joe Maddon, and not just the lineup Easter stuff, the you know, the guys he trots out and how he lines them up each and every day, but certainly when he had Baez laying down the bunt that didn't work out for the Cubs the other night, when you have first and third, nobody out, and you have the RBI leader in the National League, and, you know, he's a free swinger, as Andrew Miller said. He was aware of the situation completely. He said, knowing Joe from Tampa, it was almost automatic you were going to get the safety squeeze there. And he goes, yet I know I have a free swinger up there, and I'm trying to be aggressive and get a strikeout. And So he gives him the off-speed pitch inside, and after swinging freely on the first pitch, first offering, Baez is now bunting, and Miller's ready for it. But a lot of Cup fans are saying, what are you doing there? I mean, why is that? Is that Joe's lack of confidence in the team to come up with the big hit and just wants to scratch out or manufacture a run there? But were you surprised by that sequence of events and also having Hayward end up batting against Miller as well?
Well, you look at the scenario of who's pitching, you look at who's hitting, so he's the RBI leader in the league, but he's also a huge strikeout guy, right? I mean, he's going to strike out, you know, a ton, and you got a strikeout pitcher on the mound. So you give him one swing, and that didn't work out all that well. And then if he just executes and gets the ball bunted, not right back at the pitcher, the run scores, and you're in good shape. So I think it's one of those situations where, you know, you give a guy a chance, it didn't work out, and now you do something for the team. And unfortunately, that didn't work out either. But I think Joe, looking at the situation where he was bunting there, that's the scenario that you're talking about, that the team's frustrated with not situational hitting. If you had two guys coming up, or if Javi was the RBI leader in the league for the past 3 years, mm-hmm. it'd be a different story. He's been hot early, and he hasn't been hot lately. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And, you know, you can dissect our game because you can. But we play so many games. If you dissect one play and make that and put the umbrella over it, sometimes that can be tough in our game. But, you know, that's Joe trying to manufacture a run.
You know, Ron, the other night, John Lester looked strong again against the Indians, went 7 innings, probably could have finished, you know, probably could have stayed in there. Paul Sullivan asked an interesting question today in the Tribune about, you know, he hopes that this isn't going to be the first season the Cubs go the entire year without a complete game. Is this just a sign of the times, or is it a symptom of the starting rotation struggles that, you know, you haven't seen one yet, and you start to wonder if you're going to?
I think it's a sign of the times, David. I know John Lester wants to finish games. I know that. He's made it very clear he wants to be back to being a 200-inning pitcher. But I just don't see that being the case for many guys. You know, if you go back 10 years, there were a number of 200-inning guys. Then you go back 5 years, and that number gets cut almost in half. And then you go back 2 years to the number of 200-inning guys, and it's alarming how small that number is. And it's going to get cut again, and then eventually it's just going to go away. I just think that, you know, the way the game is played now, we're just not going to have the 200-inning pitchers any longer. You know, there'll be a rarity. There'll be one guy that dominates the league, and he'll pitch 200 innings, but you're probably looking at under a handful from now on.
How big a moment will it be Sunday night for you, Darvish? The Giants, a couple games under 500, not exactly world champion Giants, but it is national TV. It caps off the weekend series, and you've got two good starts, solid starts anyway, for you, Darvish. And here you go, you hand him the ball, and Cub fans want, and basically, Theo said, need to see more from you, Darvish, certainly.
Well, I think everybody, including you, wants to see more from himself. The last start was really good. After the first inning, I don't know what happened in the dugout, to be quite honest. I didn't want to ask what was said or what happened, but something happened because it went from being slider, 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 fastball, slider, 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 to fastball, 7 pitches in a row, maybe a breaking ball, 10 fastballs. This guy has an electric fastball, and if you use it all the time, you're going to get a lot of outs all the time. And whatever happened after the first inning, keep doing it, because that's his pitch. He's got a great heater with great movement when it gets into the hitting zone and great carry on it. You talk to Joe and hitters in Riz and KB talk about their great carry when the ball gets in the hitting zone. That's what Darvish has, and I think you're going to hopefully we're going to see that same guy and the same pitch sequences of Darvish here in this Sunday night start.
Because so much has been made about how he has embraced or not embraced the Cubs' plan and, you know, everything that goes into the scouting reports. What do you suspect, Ron? I mean, it was different after that inning. He struggled so mightily.
39 pitches in the first inning. Then,
yeah, it was so dramatic of a difference. Do you think that was him accepting more of just the obvious and saying, okay, I'm going to go out and overpower people, or what was it?
I don't know, David. That's a great question to ask. And the thing that I realized through all my years of broadcasting is I don't put a jersey on, and I'm not in the dugout. So I'm not privy to all the information that goes on. I have really good ideas of understanding from being in there for a long time of some of the things that can happen in the dugout, even in the middle of a ball game. I just think that something happened where it was to the point where, hey, This is the body of work in this inning, and it's reflective of what we've done so far this season. Let's do this. And it might have been strongly suggested or however, whatever happened, it happened. And then it worked out really well. And I don't see it changing. I would anticipate him having a really good start here on Sunday night would be my guess.
Ron, thanks for getting up early with us. We'll talk again next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Ron.
Always good. I will see you guys at Wrigley if you're there.
See you out there this weekend, Ron. Yep.
All right. Take care, Ron. That's Ron Coomer joining us each and every Friday here on The Score. And we can open up the phone lines. 312-644-6767 is the number. You got Molly and Hanley, David Haw sitting in for Mike on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Rick Renteria, the Sox manager, Sox skipper, talking about Lucas Giolito. Lots of questions in the postgame about the very short outing for Mr. Giolito, and the manager saying that he has to go back and work with Don Cooper, who I don't think Coop wants to go to Coopy. I think he will still stick with Coop. Let's go to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Matt is in River North. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, fellas. I'm just curious, what do people see in Lucas Giolito? I played baseball in Washington, D.C., at George Washington, and a buddy of mine's a scout there. And when they made a trade, he's like, Lopez is clearly better than this guy. The Nats brought Lopez up and pitched him in the playoffs, and they left Giolito off the playoff roster. They were not high on him. He does not have swing and miss stuff. It's not like he has an electric arm like Kerry Wood. He's not getting swings and misses. I think, in my opinion, when Kopech's there and Rondon comes back, he's not in the rotation. And to me, he looks like he's got a career path of like a Chris Volstad. You know, I don't see any difference between the two guys, tall guys who don't throw very hard.
I don't know if I would agree with you in terms of the rotation. I think that you look at Kopech coming up, Rodon coming back.
Yeah, you meant Rodon, right?
Yeah, you've got Lopez, you've got Giolito, and you've got James Shields. There's five. Who is Hector Santiago's going to take his place?
Covey. My guy.
Yeah. Dylan Cease had a nice slow outing. He's a few years out, but boy, that deal.
It's hitting 99, I think, in the seventh inning, seventh or eighth.
To Matt's point, we talked about the 5-5, that with Carson Fulmer, you do see the stuff. He can't control the stuff, but he has the stuff. And Giolito isn't exactly Kyle Hendricks, the professor, when it comes to velocity, but he's not going 95 to 100 on you, right? So what is his out pitch right now? What is his bread and butter? What's the pitch he leans on, or the one or two pitches that will make him part of this rotation moving forward? And that's, I don't know if they've figured that out yet.
No, I think that's what this is the purpose of this season. he's a guy who has struggled. But again, I mean, isn't this what you sort of expected out of this year? You want to see more from him. Lopez has been a revelation, I think, probably better than people thought, and Giolito's probably not been as good as people expected. But I am not ready yet to give up on a guy.
Well, when you saw the seven starts last year, yeah, where the 2.38 ERA, okay, now you're thinking, he gets in the spring training, a full season. He works with Don Cooper. You want to see you want to see progress.
Seven
right?
starts at the end of last year.
Right.
And nine starts to begin this year. I mean, they've been very different.
Right. I mean,
but I think it's hard to forget different. Those seven starts because he was in command. And
right.
he did have, you know, pretty good stuff. And he was a guy that looked very different than he does now. I think they believe that it's
which leads to the questions, is it between the ears? And Rick Renteria is answering those questions. It's always about confidence. Is it a mental thing? You know, does when he gets in a jam, does he trust himself to get out of the jam, or is it a self-fulfilling?
That's actually more promising than him saying, well, you know what? He just doesn't have good stuff.
Exactly. Right. I mean, that he's just got to figure it out.
You can work with that. And yeah, Miguel Gonzalez, Miggy, he went on the 60-day DL. So Gonzalez is not this year.
He's a placeholder. He's a nice guy.
Well, that's what I mean.
He's a great singer, apparently.
When I'm talking about those five.
I mean, he came back because available and cheap.
Isn't that the way Sox fans, okay, I'm not speaking for Sox fans. Kevin, you can speak to this. But wouldn't that be the rotation you want for the, you know, from July 1st on? Is you have Shields, you have Giolito, you have Lopez, you have Kopech, and you have Rodon.
I think it's probably the best case scenario, but I mean, as I talked about before, you can't throw Giolito out there every 5 days if he's walking this many guys of an ERA
right.
in the mid-7s.
Yeah,
even though it's a rebuilding year and you want to see what you have.
You have to give the team an opportunity.
That's unacceptable.
Right,
yeah.
So a couple more times through the rotation, if he can't figure it out, you can't basically tell the team, we're going to roll this guy out there and you know you're going to be down 4 or 5 nothing in the first inning or two because he's loaded the bases, he can't find the strike zone. At some point, you have to do what's right for the team, growing pains or not. And so it's a fine line or it's a tough balance to figure out. But if you're 13 starts into this thing, well, now maybe this is who he is. And at the minimum, you skip a start. Or the next step is just put him in the minors, let him figure it out down there and find his way back. I mean, if Kyle Schwarber can go to the minors, can't Lucas Giolito?
Yes. Yeah, he can. I think, though, those are two very different equations or situations with the team. I mean, the Cubs were a contender when they sent Schwarber down to figure it out. The Sox have nothing to really lose except for, you know, this season is designed to lose, designed to fail. You let a guy, it depends on how bad he is. I agree with you. You can't put him out there if he gives you no shot, but I don't know that you're there yet.
We have a texter, Rodon and Fulmer are busts. Like most Sox prospects, their minor league development is awful.
That's premature.
Well, Rodon, the problem with that is those are their draft picks, right? So it's great to go ahead and seed your farm system by trade with other people's prospects and try to restock that way. But people are paying attention, especially with a draft a week and a half or so away.
No question.
Where your last 5, 6 first-round picks, the jury's definitely still out on them. Now, you know, I'm not putting Carlos Rodon in, you know, on the way to Bustville. But
No.
And you know, the injury, my question would be when they drafted him, did they, you know, there was questions about how much he was used in college anyway and how many miles were on that arm to begin with. So, you know, and Fulmer, I don't know that you necessarily go ahead and people say, well, you know, a lot of great pitchers ended up in the bullpen and that's where they found their future. But you don't make a high first round pick a bullpen guy, and that wasn't by design. That was because the guy couldn't get it done in the rotation.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And Peter Gammons, Hall of Famer, joins us on the CDW Hotline. CDW, making IT solutions work for you. Orchestration by CDW. CDW, people who get it. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning.
You know, we had a nice conversation with Theo yesterday. He wasn't in the best of moods, but he said, you know, baseball, you can be optimistic and yet frustrated at the same time. And he said he's pretty much right there with the team currently.
I can see that. It's a strange team in a lot of ways. I mean, the way they'll score like 10 runs and then they won't score more than 1 run to 3 runs for about 3 or 4 days. I look at it and say, okay, somewhere along the line here, there's a really good chance that in the second half, they're going to get a lot more out of, you know, you're going to get Hap, Russell, Schwarber, Hayward, Rizzo, all hitting much better than they have. And meanwhile, you know, two out of the three of Darvish, Quintana, Chatwood pitch well. I do not understand 40 walks and, 45 and two-thirds innings for Chatwood. I just don't get that, unless he's just a little bit nervous about pitching to contact in Wrigley Field.
You know, you throw Jason Hayward in that group, and we all want to believe that because of the commitment the Cubs made to him and a lot of the optimism when he chose the Cubs over other teams and reportedly over more money. But it seems like this is who the guy is, at least offensively now. And the idea that you can debate the bunt with Baez the other night, but having Hayward taking that at bat when you had Almora and other options on the bench, Zobrist, in a game situation, the game in the balance situation, a lot of Cub fans just, we have, you know, no faith, little faith in Jason Hayward delivering the big hit when need be.
No, it's, you know, the changes he makes, I keep thinking somewhere along the line he's got to find something, really get comfortable in his own skin and just go ahead. I mean, I'm not saying that he should be a 310 hitter with 38 home runs, but, I mean, get on base 38 to 40% of the time and hit about 280 and hit about 20 home runs. And the way he plays defense and runs the bases, he's a terrific player. I just, there's something about his, I always think of it's self-esteem at the plate. And I don't get it. The way he changes his hands and so forth. He's had really good hitting coaches. I mean, they don't come much better than Chili Davis. So, I mean, I keep thinking he's still young. It will come together for him, but you're right. It hasn't, and if this is what he is, well, then you have to live with it and figure out how to go around it.
Peter, last Sunday, Yu Darvish had a 39-pitch first inning, and he came in the dugout, and something changed because then he came back out and started relying more on his fastball and blowing people away, and that was the Darvish that everyone has been waiting to see. How big of a start is it Sunday night, prime time, Giants in town, home game, first time the home fans have seen him in a while. How big of a moment will that be potentially for Yu Darvish?
I think it's a really good point because I think it is important. I mean, it's the lights are on. You've got national TV. It's a significant start for him. And I think that, you know, where the Dodgers sort of felt that he shied away from those moments, it'll be very interesting. It'll be great watching. On Sunday night, because there's no, I think for a lot of us, there's just no way of knowing which direction he's going to go in. I know the Cubs still have a lot of confidence in him, but is he the type of guy who relishes those moments? I mean, we know how the Justin Verlanders of the world and the Max Scherzers walk out to the mound and moments like that and go, this is exactly what I live for. I'm not so sure you has quite the same. Quite the same approach, and I think it's self-esteem, and there are times when he pitches to me as if he doesn't want to let people down, and you can't think that way. You have to be, has to be a little arrogance in you when you go to the mound. I mean, I always say that Verlander looks like he's walking down the red carpet when he walks out to the mound for the first inning, because he just, you know, I want it, this is what I want, and I remember when he was making the transition in Detroit long before he got to Houston. Actually, it was Brad Ausmus who had the greatest impact on him. And Brad said, you know, he'll make changes. He'll learn how to do all the analytics, prepare for games. Because the one thing that Justin Verlander hates most in the world is not being great. And I don't know if you could say the same thing about you. I mean, it's just, we all love the guy, but it's, there is that thing, and there's something wonderful about players who do absolutely detest not being great. It's what probably separates them from the rest of us.
He's Peter Gammons. You read him in The Athletic, of course, watch him on MLB Network. And Peter, it'll sound like 2020, but you and I and Molly talked about this last year when Verlander was available in Detroit, and I advocated that, you know, it's cost certain. You know what the contract is. Because you're taking the money, it doesn't cost you a whole lot in premium in terms of assets. And, you know, he goes off to Houston, and my apologies to Dallas Keuchel, because I scoffed at the idea that they wouldn't have to go through any kind of hangover with the World Series like the Cubs did when he said, we're better than that, we're a great team. And guess what? They're better than that, they're a great team. But Verlander is unbelievable, and I guess the only one who's more surprising is maybe Charlie Morton. But, you know, with three or four guys there with sub-2 ERAs right now.
Well, there's no question that the combination of what they have in terms of pitching coach and support system, along with all the work that they do on scouting and analytics and breaking down pitchers and their approaches and basically, you know, the way they use their breaking balls. I mean, it clearly is very successful. I mean, I think a lot of people and good baseball people laughed at the whole Charlie Morton thing. And he's turned out, you know, to be an extraordinary pitcher. I mean, he is the only man in baseball history to start and win Game 7 of the League Championship Series and then relieve and win the seventh game of the World Series. So that's pretty good. And then he's been, I mean, I know his ERA went over 2 last night. That's shocking. But
get rid of bullpen. Put him in the bullpen.
he'll do anything. He is, by the way, one of the nicest people you could ever meet. But they did a great job recognizing what he could do and getting him to utilize it. And because I think Pittsburgh does a very good job of pitchers too, but the Astros do a great job, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. I think sometimes people who live and die just live in the morning for XWOBA. I think sometimes they get a little carried away with the Astros because this organization did not draft or sign originally Springer or Keuchel or Altuve. So there was a lot there before they got there, much more than, say, the Cubs had in front of them. But they've done a great job with those guys.
Peter, yesterday, Wellington Castillo was released a statement about his 80-game ban for taking PEDs, and Rick Hahn talked about, you know, the short term, not, you know, obviously being, it's not going to be affect the rebuild, and looking at the long-term view of it as well. I think he's probably right, but what's your opinion of, number one, the impact that will have on the White Sox organization, and number two, just what you think about a guy who actually acknowledges in his statement the fact that he actually did what he's accused of doing?
I thought that was good. Because none of us are going to listen to somebody say, you know, somebody slipped a Mickey in my drink, you know. I mean, it's just we're past that at this point. I do think, though, that one thing that bothers me is that agents do a lot of talking when they've got players on the free agent market, and they do a lot of talking for excuses at times for their players, and they like to be seated at the table when there's a press conference for a player. But when it comes to testing positive, I think that the commissioner's office and the Players Association should ensure that in the stories covering the drug suspensions, that it would be player, comma, represented by such and such agency. Because I do believe that it's up to, you know, this guy says, well, I didn't know what was it. Well, the agent should know what their clients are taking. And they do get, you know, 4 to 5% of the money that's brought in, of the salaries. And I think they should take more responsibility in the players off the field. And I think it's a huge hole in baseball. And the teams can't monitor it in the offseason. Agents can. And I think the agents should be accountable for when their clients test positive and do certain things to hurt teams and hurt the game.
Hey, now, Wellington's going to get docked the 80 games pay. We don't understand that, but he signed a 2-year contract for $15 million guaranteed, more money than he's made in his career to this point. And so, you know, that the crime does pay eventually and ultimately. Do the White Sox bring him back because he was supposed to help lead a young group of White Sox pitchers in particular and mentor them as they move along in terms of their development? Or do you just say, you know what, he made a mistake, he admitted it, and he's still of some value here?
I think you count on him sort of trying to make up for it. I think you count on him coming back and being contrite. How good he really is with pitchers, we'll see. But at the same time, you know, I think you have to bring him back, the money, but also, you know, you take that chance. If you wanted him to help the young pitchers, if he legitimately makes every effort to restore his reputation, well, then fine. You've got a decent player. So, I mean, I would bring him back and see what happens. I think it would be so foolish to just say, oh, no, we're not going to bother. And we're just going to pay him for next year. I think that's also a problem. I think there should be, I don't know if the Players Association will ever go for it, but I Never. Do think that one can argue that there should be some sort of way that teams and players could say that between the two of them, you know, we buy you out at 20% of your second year remaining part of your contract,
or just walk away. I mean, you should just avoid the contract.
Has to be a deterrent.
Yeah.
And I think it would be it. And I think again, I think it would cause agents to be far more accountable and get involved with their clients in the off season.
Peter, great point. Always enjoy the conversation. We'll be watching on the MLB Network and reading in the Atlantic. Have a great holiday week, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Peter.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Peter Gammons will be in town also for the Hot Stove Cool Music event that Theo and the Foundation to be named later.org organization will be putting together in the first week of June. And don't forget, come to Swaparama for bargains, for food, for fun. Three great locations: Melrose Park, Alsop, right here in the city at 42nd and Ashland. Visit Swaparama's website for market info. Find out how to become a Swaparama vendor. Go to swap-o-rama.com. Swaparama, it's the first name in flea markets. You got Mully and Haley on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.